Breakers allow higher-rated teams more of an opportunity to play in the conference championship game. Some news from the NHL. Steve Yzerman has stepped down as the GM of the Detroit Red Wings, this after seven seasons. The Hurricanes will open the season September 29th against the Florida Panthers.
Fox Sports update on the Right Choice KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, specials on wine, and dinner specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, Land O'Lakes is investing in its Tulare, California dairy processing facility to expand into high-value dairy protein by enabling production of ultra-filtered milk. The Minnesota-based company says the move provides growth opportunities for farmer owners and strengthens the ability to compete in a changing food landscape. According to Land O'Lakes, protein has moved beyond a niche health category to become a defining force in how consumers evaluate food. Well, U.S. ethanol exports rebounded in May, up 11% from April to 189.7 million gallons as demand grew in key international markets. Canada remained the top customer, with imports rising 18% to a six-month high of 76.3 million gallons, and the European Union jumped 15%. Those two accounted for more than 60% of all U.S. ethanol exports. Exports also surged in Nigeria, Colombia, and Vietnam, but declined in South Korea and the U.K. Well, farmer sentiment weakened again in June as the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer fell 6 points to 113, the second straight monthly decline. The index of current conditions dropped to its lowest level since December of 2024, while the Future Expectations Index moved lower as producers remained cautious about the year ahead. 47% of farmers surveyed identified rising input costs as their biggest challenge, preventing improvements in their financial position.
Replenish nutrients in your crops to reach stronger yields at harvest. Utilize PK from Helena as a foliar nutrient system designed to boost plant performance during reproduction. It gives your crop the extra energy it needs during critical growth stages to increase uptake and utilization of soil and foliar applied nutrients. Visit HelenaAgri.com to learn how utilized PK can impact your success this season. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they're, well, farming. It's easy to find them during the day as most farmers are behind the wheel of their pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. So reach real farmers right here, right now, as they listen to what's important to their farm operation. Give us a call and we'll connect you with our local farming community. They trust us, so they'll trust you.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks trying to hold on to gains in afternoon trading following a cooler-than-expected producer price index report and upbeat bank earnings. Shares of BlackRock are rallying 7% after the investment firm posted banner quarterly results and made history as the first investment firm to manage more than $15 trillion in assets. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks are mostly higher. Shares of Apple are up over 3% and hitting an all-time high. And shares of Dutch chip equipment maker ASML are up nearly 1% after the company raised its annual sales guidance again and said it would produce more of its machines as the artificial intelligence boom boosts demand. Shares of IBM are falling over 1% after tanking 25% on Tuesday following dismal preliminary financial results. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband, Ryan, died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term. Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
Last January, the Chinese Information Service in New York released a report about a commencement address in Peking that should have had our ears burning. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction for architectural metal roofing and siding. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
With our own counterintelligence capability somewhat hamstrung as it has been recently, it's good to have friends. Intelligence sources in Taipei, the Free Republic of China, have made available excerpts of a speech made by Kung Piao, director of the Department for Foreign Liaison to the graduating class of the College of Foreign Affairs in Red China. The college is the training institute for diplomats. Kung's speech, like the Brezhnev speech I reported on a few weeks ago, was not for public dissemination, which is a polite way of saying it was supposed to be secret. His topic was a turning point in Sino-American relations. It might be well to note that while the name Kung Piao is not exactly a household word in America, he is very much a part of the policy-making process in the Chinese Communist Party. In his address, he was bluntly outspoken about the two superpowers, Russia and the United States. He said both were bent on aggression, and therefore the spearhead of Red China's struggle would be aimed at both. The fact that, for the moment, we're not being referred to as United States imperialists doesn't mean that Peking has forsaken or even softened on Marxist-Leninist principles, says Kung. According to Kung, the People's Republic of China is temporarily caught in a narrow crack between two imperialist camps. Yes, he calls the Soviet Union imperialist as well as aggressor. According to Kung, it would be unthinkable for his country to try to deal with the two imperialists at the same time. So the strategy is to temporarily, and we should permanently keep that word in mind, put their dispute with us aside so as to have one less enemy. He complained to the graduates that there were some revolutionary hotheads in their people's paradise who don't realize the United States, for all its vaunted power, has a soft, weak side, which they, the communists, can use to their advantage. Ah, to see ourselves as others see us. Kung explained that Peking, while recognizing our imperialism, could at the same time promote, for its own purposes, a friendly relationship with the United States. In perfect Mao Zedong language, he called this a policy of duality. Under this policy, they can denounce us for stationing troops in some lands, Taiwan for instance, and at the same time, with no self-consciousness, endorse our maintaining troops in Western Europe and the Philippines. This is called tactical flexibility. He admitted there was no hurry about taking back Taiwan. They simply accept that it belongs to them, and they don't mind our taking care of it for them for a while. But he made it plain that normal relations between the United States and Red China will not come about unless we withdraw our ambassador from Taiwan. On that point, he said, we haven't lived up to their expectations. But then went on to tell the students, quote, just wait for the opportune day. Then we'll tell Uncle Sam to pack up and leave. Unquote. Before closing, he reaffirmed that the Soviet Union is the primary threat and detente is disturbing to Peking. More American leaders, he said, political, military, and social, would be invited to mainland China to keep us quiet and friendly until they can handle, quote, Soviet revisionist social imperialism, unquote. Then it will be our turn. That's something for us to keep in mind while our touring officials are mastering chopsticks. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today, we're going to be having Dan Blackburn on the show. We're going to be talking about a book Dan wrote quite a few years ago. And the case and what's happening with it now. Dan Blackburn, for those that don't know, he was the co-founder of Cal Coast News. We co-founded the agency, and we began publishing in 2008. We put it together in 2007. We were responsible. We've had multiple investigations that have led to indictments and have helped clean up some of the corruption in the county. Dan is now retired, but before he came to work for Cal Coast News, he was the Orange County Bureau Chief in Sacramento, or the Orange County Register Bureau Chief in Sacramento. And he began, he met a woman named Dorothea Fuentes. I hope I'm saying that right. But Dan, and we're going to be talking today about what's going on with the story of that one of our nation's main, I think the only major female serial killer in our nation, what's going on with that now, and what's going on with the, Dan wrote a book, it was a bestseller back at the time. Dan, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show today.
Oh, great, thanks, I appreciate being invited. Probably a lot of interesting stuff that we can talk about today.
I wanted to start about, you know, that this is suddenly becoming a big deal again. And can you tell us what's going on with Hulu and also what's going on in Sacramento that is a revival of what happened, what, more than 30 years ago?
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. I wrote the book, and there was a little bit of fanfare around it, you know, and life went on. But for a long time, I didn't give Dorothea much in the way of thought, although at the time we were corresponding briefly or occasionally while she was in prison. Let me tell you what's happening currently, and then we kind of swing into a discussion of how it all got to this point. I just learned, and others too, that HBO was planning to do a what they call a limited series on, and what they described it was on Dorothea, which is interesting because generally a lot of these series have focused on the crime itself. In fact, I don't think it's been a series yet. It's been exploited by single presentation TV features. So it basically has been examined, as I was saying, in bits and pieces. Dorothea Puente was a woman who established a boarding house in Sacramento. And this was in the late 70s, early 80s, and through the 80s. And her primary tenants were people who had some sort of government funding, most of them Social Security checks and or supplemental Social Security. So they had incomes of some sort, and Dorothea would find a home for them in her residence on F Street in Sacramento. And for a long time, she was perceived as being a beneficial contributor to the community. She was doing all these nice things for these people who basically had no family, no contacts, no way of really supporting themselves. So she basically had them in this home, and then to take it to the end, she was eventually convicted of killing three of those people and suspicion of murdering as many as five or six more. And she was eventually convicted and sent to prison. But currently, as I said, HBO is planning this new limited series.
And who is the actress playing Dorothy?
Gina Davis, who will portray Dorothea. Now, the interesting part of all this for me is that my book, Human Harvest, was published prior to Dorothea's trial. And we were able to do that because, A, we knew there were a number of publishers planning books with writers who will be covering her trial, which lasted a year. I told my publisher that what we had was essentially the history of Dorothea Puente up to the point where she was arrested and charged, that we didn't have to determine anything from the trial, whether she was guilty or innocent, that we could tell a full story of how Dorothea basically got herself involved in this particular type of situation. So it was really the history of Dorothea up until the point of her arrest. And the publisher said, after a consultation with lawyers, he said, yeah, we can do that. Let's do that. So we did that. The story was published, I think you said earlier, quite a while ago, 36 years ago. Okay, so from that point on, not much. There was some television discussions, FBI had a kind of a fictional account of it. Some of these other programs dealt with it in about an hour format. But there was never anything like what is going to occur with HBO. Because they'll be telling the story of Dorothea, apparently. And my book is the only source of information to speak of about Dorothea before her arrest and charged.
And can you kind of tell the audience also, how did you find out? I find it fascinating how you met her and how you got her to talk to you.
Sure. I had at that time a little news organization called California News Agency out of Sacramento, and we provided, you know, Capital News to a variety of clients. I had three reporters, so there were four of us, and we would come into the office at 11th and L Building, which is across from the Capitol, come into the office at varying times, 8, 9, 10, 11 sort of thing, because legislative days often stretched beyond the 9 to 5. And we would meet in a little cafe, little coffee shop, which was adjacent to a saloon called Henry's. I think it was on 9th Street. So we were meeting one morning in this, and we walked out through the bar. They were connected by a door at the back of the bar. Walk out, and someone grabbed me by the arm as we walked by the bar. I turned around, and here was this elegantly dressed white lady, older lady, like much of the male clientele at the bar at this time, which was in the morning, by the way, everybody drinking alcohol. She grabbed me by the arm and she said, hey, are you guys cops? And I said, no, why would you ask? She said, well, you're all wearing ties. You know, we don't see people in ties in here very much, which is true. As I say, it was a blue-collar bar made up mostly of people who, you know, were older and kind of spent a lot of their time in a saloon nursing a cocktail. So anyway, I met her in that way. And then my wife and I had a home in Sacramento at 24th and G Street. And Dorothea was in that vicinity, so I would often see her walking some of her tenants around. Some of them weren't mentally sharp. Some of them were, but of the 10 or 12 people who would be in her home at any given time, probably three or four people had their full mental capabilities, and The rest were somewhere else. That's how kind of she got away with some of her crimes that we'll go into. But so she basically was running this type of boarding home for these people. And as I say, she was thought of in the community by law enforcement and probation and parole and social workers that she was, you know, one of the good people. So that's how I met her. And as I say, we kind of stayed in touch during that period of time. She would come into the 11th and L building to my little news agency as she passed out press releases. People would go through the building handing out press releases to all the news media. Most of the news media was gathered in that same building at the time. And she was active in a local politics, which didn't seem weird at the time, but after the fact, of course, we kind of know why she was involved. She was exploiting, basically, these people who were in her home. But, again, no one knew it at the time. So I noticed about Dorothea, even while I was standing there in our very first meeting, she was very elegantly dressed. She looked smart. She looked, you know, she looked very good for a woman in her, probably in her 60s, late 60s at that time. Somebody said something to her, and she said, absolutely, and decided to buy a round of drinks for the house. And there were probably 15 people in the bar at that time. She pulled out a wad of cash, paid the bartender, and continued drinking her own vodka grapefruit juice. Tall, obviously, always tall. That's all she drank. But the interesting thing about Dorothea was that she had a really extremely detailed knowledge of Social Security law. And she was able to talk to various pensioners, men, generally men who were on some sort of Social Security benefit, and actually, in many cases, found ways to increase their monthly check. So she had a reputation, again, for being helpful, for doing kind of the right thing. And I emphasize that because that's how she was overlooked by law enforcement authorities for so long. She was the co-payee on these people's checks. Well, let me explain that. She had this house with 10 or 12 people, all of whom were getting some sort of Social Security check. They all signed over to her the rights for her to be co-payee, which meant that the check was made out to her and to the tenant. So she received all of their checks at the first of the month or whenever they were being delivered, first, 15th, whatever. And then she would dole out a little cash to people depending on their wants and their needs. And then she would provide them with a home and a lot of good food. She was known to be an excellent cook, and she took pride in cooking meals that people actually talked about. Again, adding to her aura of being one of the good guys. Now, I admit I didn't really form any kind of a personal relationship with her. So I think when she decided to contact me after her troubles became public and she was arrested, probably it was because I was the only reporter she really remembered talking to. So I would say at the beginning, luck was a big part of my ability to write this particular story. And, of course, the HBO plan kind of reignites this whole thing. I had a phone call from my publisher who wants to republish the book in paperback based on all of that which is happening at the moment.
In the new book, you'll actually get into what happened at the trial. It'll have a different ending, correct?
I expect so. Quite frankly, I haven't discussed with him what the content would be. It's my understanding that I may be able to add certain things to the paperback, one of which I think would be, hopefully, would be a prologue written by someone else who, you know, observes, read the book and observes certain things. Certainly would like to do book, but if it comes out that he wants to reprint my book without any input from me, I wouldn't have any problem with that. It's kind of like a nice gift left on your porch by Amazon, so I'll go with that. I'll be able to talk more about that once I know what kind of a deal I'm going to be having in the reprint of the book. But it's very exciting to me because, as I say, this is all kind of being dredged up from the deep. And here it is, all of a sudden, front and center. You know, again, to some people. In Sacramento, it's a big deal. Dorothea's house has just been added to a Sacramento, a City of Sacramento-sponsored tour. So people will actually be able to, as part of a tour, go into Dorothea's house and look around. I don't know what it looks like now. People have lived in it since, two different owners. I went through it before, well, during trial, so it was still in the same condition it was when she was taken out finally and arrested. A police investigator took me through and showed me portions of it that were going to be put into evidence. You know, I got lots of things to talk about. I can talk about my reception when I started to write the book. I've been a newspaper reporter for most of my career. Written a lot of magazine articles. In fact, this book spun off of a California magazine article that I wrote called Nightmare on F Street. But anyway, I have dealt with police officers, police officials, you know, throughout my career. But even cops that I had was friends with, there would always be kind of a guarded relationship. And I understood that. There was only so much they could tell me. Same thing with a magazine article. You know, working on a magazine article, you go in to see the cops. They talk to you just about the way they would to a newspaper reporter, I guess. So I was used to that. But once I had this contract with the publisher, I went into the Sacramento PD and asked to talk to the detective who was in charge of Dorothea's case. And I was greeted as though I was some sort of royalty. It was extraordinary. I suppose they thought I was writing a book, so therefore they wouldn't read anything in the morning newspaper. And I was suddenly privy to social workers and parole agents, probation officers, a couple of reports that I never would have even known about, much less tried to get a hold of. It was just a whole different thing. John Cabrera was the detective at the time, and I think John was very much aware of the bigness of the case that he was involved in, which is probably why I got all of what I got. I think John has now published a book himself and has done a lot of things in the interim, you know, that because of his knowledge and background on the case. The case has a lot of interesting facets. In the first place, she learned how to poke and prod in the Social Security system to take advantage of loopholes that existed. And after the book was published, I was on Larry King Live, and I tried to discuss in some detail where these big problem areas existed. And still, it was 13 years before Congress actually moved to make the changes necessary. And then one of which was the most glaring was simply the proper vetting of people who were going to be co-payees on the distribution of checks involving people who need a co-payee, someone who's incompetent to handle their own finances. She basically said, I'm the one. She was granted essentially permission by Social Security to be co-payee, and she had a criminal record at the time.
She did have a criminal. What was her criminal record at the time?
Just fraudulent stuff. She was a con person. She got accused on a number of occasions, and she got convicted on several of them. And they were just, you know, you saw the pattern of her developing as a petty crook. Someone who knew how to do something criminal and basically stuck with that particular thing and exploited it. That was Dorothea.
Now, you, I remember you had some legal trouble during this. So you published the book, and you have, or your, will you tell me about the legal trouble? I know there was a court, you were taken to court regarding this book.
Actually, looking back on that now, take a break.
Hey, we're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and we will learn more about what Dan, what they went after Dan for during this publishing of his book.
If you ever have an accident, just where do you take your vehicle for top-notch repair? I could tell you, but isn't it better to hear from past Davis Body Shop customers? Here's what Kim M. from Atascadero had to say.
What an amazing team. I could not have asked for better service, and my car looked as good as new when they were finished. Patrick took care of me from day one, always keeping me updated about the process and their speedy timeline. I highly recommend them to all my friends and family. Excellent job.
Scott from Atascadero had this to say.
Great body shop. I was hit by another vehicle and took my truck to Davis. The work was done over a month ago and the repair work still looks great. No hidden problems. The truck left Davis in better condition than before the accident. Thanks to Tim and Patrick for all the extra work. It's really appreciated.
And that's why Davis Body Shop is the largest auto body collision specialist in San Luis Obispo County with two locations. On El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
Summer evenings call for something special, and Cella Restaurante and Bar at Allegretto Vineyard Resort delivers just that. Savor rustic northern Italian cuisine crafted from regionally foraged ingredients paired with an extensive wine list and garden-inspired craft cocktails, all in the warm, inviting atmosphere Cello is known for. Whether it's dinner on the patio or drinks at the bar, Cello is the perfect Paso Robles summer night out. Visit CelloPasoRobles.com to reserve your table.
Conservative patriots and freedom lovers, join the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County for our biggest event of the year, the Lincoln-Reagan-Trump Dinner, celebrating America's 250th birthday, August 1st at the Raven Ranch in Templeton. Featured speaker is Trump defender Devin Nunes. General admission tickets, $150, with VIP at $250. Early bird pricing still on till July 15th. Seating is limited and this event will sell out. Visit rpsloc.org for tickets today. Paid for by the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursdays. Today I have Cal Coast News co-founder Dan Blackburn talking about his book, Human Harvest. And it's going to be put, it's being republished. There is a resurgence of interest in Dorothy Puentes, a woman suspected of killing a serial killer, female from California, suspected of killing around nine people. So, Dan, you put the book together. She's talking to you about her life from jail. She's been told not to. What were the legal issues that occurred at that point?
Well, let me tell you how the book got started, because that's germane to what occurred later on. I had written an article in California Magazine, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, called Nightmare on F Street. And after that is when I first got a phone call from Dorothea. She had been arrested. When I heard, I was following her story of all this, when they were doing the digging in Sacramento, and then she fled. They chased her, and they caught her in L.A. and took her back to Sacramento. I knew when they were flying her back that they would book her at the Sacramento City Jail. So I put together a quick letter to her care of city jail, and said, you know, if you ever want to talk, here's my phone number. And basically forgot about it after that. So one day, my wife and I were living in Manhattan Beach, kind of on the water, and we were all sitting out front Monday morning, I think it was, drinking margaritas, as we often did, had a lot of fun. And my wife comes out and says, you got to collect a phone call. So I went up to the apartment, and it was Dorothea. And she said, I'm calling you, Dan, because my attorneys told me I couldn't talk to any media. I don't like to be told what to do. So she talked to me for a while, and after the conversation, I went back down to my partying friends, told them what happened, and they, none of them believed me. They thought I'd been spoofed, and they thought it was very funny. So she did call back a second and third and fourth time, three more times. And I audio taped each one of those conversations. I knew I was doing something illegal, but at the time I think I thought, well, nobody's going to know about this but me. So I had three basically illegal taped recorded conversations with Dorothea. And I incorporated that into the book. I had developed all of this information about Dorothea when one day my wife, Maria Centrella, noticed a little ad in Variety magazine, which is a entertainment trade mag. It basically, it was a one-by-one ad, and it said, new publisher seeking, you know, timely manuscripts or something to that effect. So I contacted them, and the guy says, do you have a manuscript? I was talking, I think, to the lawyer. And I said, no, but I got this, this, and this, and this. I told him what I had. I think, I don't remember exactly, but probably within 24 hours, I had an offer from them. And it was interesting because this particular publisher was the son of one of the major book publishers in New York. And I think they sent him out to California with some capital. And he established what was then known as Knightsbridge Publishing, with a substantial capital account, apparently. So mine was the very first book they published, which put me in a unique situation because they ended up sending me a 10-city tour, five on the East Coast, two in the middle, and three on the West Coast, I guess. So, and they spent a lot of money on my tour, and they ended up publishing 24 titles that particular first year, and went belly up after about 18 months. And I think a lot of it probably was the capital they spent on mine, but I don't mind. I got a lot of promotion out of it, had an exciting time, and, you know, that was that. I had a lot of information that law enforcement didn't have. And the reason, coming back to my confrontation with, in that case, the Dorothea's defense lawyers, led by a very nice and competent attorney named Kevin Climo, they wanted my audio tapes, which they pointedly noted were illegally obtained. They wanted my unpublished notes. They wanted everything I had, basically, that pertained to the Dorothea case. They wanted that because my recordings, Dorothea would denied to me that she had anything to do with any of this, that she was completely innocent. And her lawyers considered that to be, I don't know the exact terms, so I'll kind of make it up here, but it's something about her unsuspecting, unvarnished admissions of innocence, you know, made in circumstances, I guess, you know, that would be believable. So they wanted my tapes. Of course, I said no. I got this subpoena that said, come to Sacramento and bring all that stuff, and we're going to decide whether you have to give it up or not. So time for a break.
Yeah, and we'll come back and we'll learn more about what happened with the legal issues with the defense attorney after our top of the hour break.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.